My name is Freeze. Learn it well. Batman and Robin.
It's an insult to Batman. It's an insult to nipples. It's just blah.
This is the way the world could end.
Welcome to Super Podcast, episode 34. And I'm Super Marcy, which means I'm the best. And I have three special guests today. And my first guest, making his return, because I totally kicked him off for the last few shows. Welcome back, Bede, the terrible Australian. Hello, Bede.
Hi, Marcy. How are you?
I am ill. How are you?
Oh, not too bad, although I am upset that you've kicked me off the last couple episodes.
Well, if you had lady parts, you would have been more than welcome, but you don't, so that's why you were not allowed on.
If I spoke in my lady act, in my lady voice, would I be able to be on one?
No, that probably would have been scary.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
So, Bede.
Fine.
Bede, aside from you doing female impersonations, why are you terrible this week?
Okay, I have to admit, I'm a terrible Australian because I have seen Tooth Fairy starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
You should be ashamed.
Yeah, it's as terrible as you think it is.
Yeah, I can imagine that it is.
Think of the worst thing you could ever imagine and multiply by a million and you have Tooth Fairy.
Yes, that's pretty much what I thought.
Yes.
All right. Now, seeing as you're not the only person on the podcast, I will introduce the other two guests and I will introduce AJ first because it's been quite a while since he's been on the podcast. So, welcome back, AJ.
It's good to be back here, although the real question is whether I'm here or whether my pants are here right now.
Oh, dear. Why would you not have any pants?
I don't know. Why would Bede go see Tooth Fairy? Bede, this is how it works. I see the shitty movies, I say see them, and then you don't see them.
Yeah, but I'm terrible. I have to see these movies.
But I'm awful. I saw this in the theater, damn it.
Well, I didn't see it in the cinema. I saw it on DVD, so.
Well, that makes AJ the awful American.
Right.
Awesome. And last but not least, welcoming back Sam to the podcast all the way from merry old England.
Hi, Marcy. Nice to be back.
Awesome. And, well, I'm not going to call you awful or terrible or anything because you have a cool British accent.
Well, thank you very much.
Yay. All right. Now,
I also have my pants on.
Oh, even better.
I'm beating AJ on that score.
Oh, look at me. I'm the Englishman. I have pants. I'm modern. Who?
Well, actually, they're trousers.
I mean, get it right. It's trousers.
Okay, Gov.
the subject of this podcast is not trousers and pants and who's wearing them. It is actually, what do we call it? Stinkers of the 90s. So basically the worst of the worst from the 90s, which is maybe why AJ took his pants off. I don't know.
The fury that these films have instilled in me has just caused me to do random acts of violence and shenanigans. Shenanigans are definitely caused as a result of remembering these pieces of crap.
Indeed, indeed. All right. So we've all got, we've all got a top five list, but to kick things off, we will do dishonorable mentions. And seeing as I totally forgot what one of mine was, I'll get Bede to go first.
Okay, my first dishonorable mention is Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare. It's utterly terrible, this movie. I mean, this turn, it's just a cartoon. It's like the worst piece of cartoon crap I have ever seen. Everybody who was in this movie should be ashamed of being in it.
Well, you know, when Freddy has a power glove and...
And he's on, like, a broomstick.
Oh, my God.
And he wheels out the spikes, like, in a friggin' Looney Tunes cartoon.
Oh, my God.
It's terrible.
You've kind of stolen my thunder here, B, because it was one of my top five.
Oh, well, I won't go into it. I won't go into it as much, so, since it's a response. Dishonorable mention, so we'll talk about it more a bit later.
Either that or Sam can just pick another one if he wants.
Well, we could always go into it now.
Well, we can wait because it's dishonorable mentions and we got to be really quick.
Yeah. Sure. My other dishonorable mention is The Astronaut's Wife starring Johnny Depp and Charlize Theron.
I don't remember that movie at all.
Oh, it's pretty much like a sci-fi version of Rosemary's Baby, except crap.
The only thing I actually remember was a really stupid sex scene between those two in it.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know why I remembered that, but maybe because I'm a pervert. I don't know.
It's been a while since I've seen it, but I do remember it was just a pain to sit through. And it's like, and Johnny Depp, like, it has to be the worst performance he's ever given. Like, he just seemed bored throughout the entire movie. No enthusiasm whatsoever.
And didn't Thingy have, like, the Mia Farrow haircut as well?
Yeah, she did, actually. Mm. She did.
Yeah, I do remember that being pretty crap. Interesting. All right. I'll get AJ to do his dishonorable mentions.
All right, my dishonorable mentions, there's two of them. I'll be quick about it, but there's two that I have to mention. One is the Meteor Man. And people...
What the fuck is that?
Yeah, I know. This summer, like, Jonah Hex has gotten a lot of crap. But, you know, stuff actually happened in that movie. Like, what other movie are you going to see where John Malkovich tries to blow up the U.S. Capitol building with a doomsday gun built by Eli Whitney? Like, that alone is worth at least the rental. But Meteor Man, like, nothing happened in it. It was, like, some really weird attempt to be, like launch its own superhero franchise. I even remember comic books in, like, the drugstore in Rice Lake when I was a kid. And it has Robert Townsend, and he gets hit with a meteor, and he has all these powers, and he helps, like, the kids not get into gangs and stay in school. And it's just the most incredibly banal, boring superhero movie ever. Like, even more so Blank Man. This is worse than Blank Man.
Wow.
I was just about to ask you about Blank Man, because they kind of came out.
I've actually seen this movie.
I just had to IMDb it, and oh my God, just the picture. I'm trying not to piss my pants. It just looks so bad.
I haven't seen it in such a long time, but I do remember it wasn't that good.
Like, the one scene where something, like, even remotely interesting happens is that, well, like, one of his powers is that he reads a book and then he, like, does whatever's in the book. So then, like, he and the villain are fighting and, like, they read a fashion magazine and just start voguing to each other, just, like, a pose off in the middle of, like, this alley. Mm. And it's like, hey, something okay happened. And then 2 seconds later, it's done. Just, like, back to the boring, stay off drugs, kids.
Sounds phenomenal.
Yeah.
In a way that it actually doesn't sound phenomenal.
Like, this should be one of those movies that's such a blast to make fun of, but you're just so bored you can't even, like, muster any jokes, whatever. You're, like, sinking into your chair out of despair, hoping this movie will end.
Meteor Man's in town!
Oh, man. Bill Cosby, Don Cheadle, and James Earl Jones were in that movie.
I hope they're ashamed.
Everybody's in that.
Indeed. And I'll pass it over to Sam for his dishonorable mentions.
Okay, I've got a couple of real doozies for dishonorable mentions. Both films that I kind of missed at the time, but ended up catching on TV because I was bored and there was nothing better to do. There would have been lots better to do in both cases, but that's beside the point, really. First up, Bicentennial Man, which is, yeah, based on an Isaac Asimov story, which I'm sure is a lot more interesting than the Robin Williams mawkish shit fest that they turned it into. It's really creepy as well. It's got Robin Williams in this weird suit playing a 200-year-old robot who eventually becomes a man and very creepily falls in love with the identical granddaughter of the woman he looked after when she was a child, because in this world, robots are babysitters. And it's just skin-crawlingly uncomfortable.
Yeah, you can say that again.
And also just really, really terrible. It's not funny. It's not clever. It doesn't, it's not, you know, in any way moving except, you know, moving you towards the toilet to be sick. It's just inexplicable that somebody made that. But then again, you know, look at Robin Williams in the 90s. You know, there's a lot of inexplicable things there. The other one I've got is something that I've actually seen a lot of people defend, but I really hated it, and that's Armageddon.
And I hate that movie too.
I've heard a lot of people say it made them cry. I mean, Harry Knowles is famous for saying he cried like 3 times in Armageddon. And in a way I can see why that is, because it's just so nakedly manipulative and, you know, the end, the score is swelling, Bruce Willis is weeping, and it's, you know, it's basically Michael Bay whipping you and saying, cry, you bastards, cry. Mm. And nothing disconnects me from emotion faster. You know, and add to that the fact that it's all just spectacle, it's all just computers throwing rocks at things, and, you know, the characters are all these total stereotypes. No, nobody has anything approaching a character rather than a trait or two. It's just, I mean, it's blockbuster making by the numbers, and it's the kind of thing that depresses me that it works, you know?
That movie made me cry in the sense that I was crying because it was so shit and I was wasting my time watching it.
I mean, I liked the film that came out at the same time, which was Deep Impact.
You know, yeah, I like that a bit better. Moment. Yeah, I really fucking did not like Armageddon. Thumbs down from me too.
It's been about 12 years since I've seen it, and I can't really get a fair judgment on it.
Oh, it's just crap. It's just the fuck off movie.
And also, worst Aerosmith song ever?
Oh, God.
Throwing it out.
How annoying was that song, because it played all the freaking time. It's like, shut the fuck up. I don't want to hear it anymore.
I mean, I don't even like Aerosmith very much, but if you're going to play Aerosmith, don't play that.
Indeed. Indeed. All right. My turn. Yay. Okay. Nothing to get excited about, but yeah, I had to change one of my dishonorable mentions because it's on somebody else's list. So I replaced it with Biodome, which is a Paulie Shore movie, which you can tell already, like, if you haven't seen it, that, yeah, it's a piece of shit because it's got Paulie Shore in it. And it's so retarded, and you feel retarded watching it, and I can't believe I wasted my time watching it. Blah. Yuck.
All I've seen of that movie is the Nostalgia Critic review, and, that looks pretty shocking.
It is terrible, and just to note, it has Kylie Minogue in it, and, she can't act. What's up?
That's pretty much always an advertisement that you're about to waste your time, isn't it?
Pretty much.
But she stretched her acting muscles more so in Street Fighter when she played Cammy.
Oh, please don't bring up that.
Just there, be like, I'm going to punch somebody. Bam, that's it. That's all she did.
She was so annoying in that movie.
She also hilariously attempted a British accent in that.
She did, too. Oh, God, I'm not going to attempt a British accent. I cannot do accents today. It's just not working for me. My other dishonorable mention. And, oh my God, this movie was so terrible. It's called A Cop and a Half, and it stars Burt Reynolds and some little kid. It is so awful.
Oh, man.
It's like this kid, and he's somehow a cop or some crap, and it's like, what the fuck is this rubbish?
Oh, that movie was terrible.
And it was directed by the Fonz.
Oh, no.
What?
Yes.
No.
Henry Winkler directed Cop and a Half.
You sit on a throne of lies.
No, it is. I speak the truth, and I'm sorry to tell you, but yeah.
No.
Tis true.
Yeah, Cop and a Half was Burt
Reynolds. Broke Adrian.
He's broken. He's a broken man.
Oh, does man. Not compute.
Cop I'm and a so half... sorry. Go ahead, Bede.
I was going to say, Cop and a Half was Burt Reynolds' Tooth Fairy.
Indeed. Oh, my God. It's a shit fest.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't there, like, a debate between, like, Siskel and Ebert? Like, one of them liked it, and the other looked at them and said, like, what the hell are you thinking? Like, or am I imagining that? I think it was, like, that was one of their
main debates. No, that's absolutely true.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
Yeah. I can't remember who liked it, though, to be honest.
But that's interesting. It might be worth Googling at some stage.
You can YouTube the review.
Yeah, even better. And apparently, this was supposed to be, like, a sequel to Kindergarten Cop.
Oh, man.
Don't ask me how that works, but, yeah. Whatever. All right. Let's get into the top five. I'll go first, because I feel like it. I'm going to name five and four, and you guys can do the same when it's your turn. I'm putting at number five... a really shitty movie, and it's kind of going in the same subject because a lot of, like, big action stars have made films like this before. I'm going with Mr. Nanny starring Hulk Hogan. From those reactions.
I've seen this one, but...
this movie is a piece of shit.
Look, man, I made a mistake.
It's crap. It's pretty crap.
Yeah, anything Hulk Hogan does is pretty shit, but this really takes the cake.
Please shut up.
Hulk Hogan plays a wrestler. What a surprise. He's then hired to be a bodyguard for bratty kids, but then the dad is, like, got these bad guys after him, and I think they kidnap the kids and... he's got to save them and all this crap. And the kids are like little shits that, like, I don't know, they try to hurt him and make a fool out of Hulk Hogan, which isn't actually that hard.
That's pretty much the entire movie.
That's it, really.
You know, nowadays people complain about remakes, but, you know, they don't remember the 90s when pretty much everything, it seemed, was a rip-off of Problem Child.
You know, yeah.
How many times do we need to see Problem Child?
Yeah, and then this kind of stuff is getting remade with, like, Vin Diesel and The Rock and whoever else Jackie does this crap. Chan. Jackie Chan, yeah. It's like, why? This film was bad enough. You're not going to improve on it because it's a stupid formula. Ugh. Got that off my chest.
Mercy, I have to add this. I think I found something that could be worse than Mr. Nanny. I didn't watch the full thing. I made it through 10 minutes. It's called Twin Sitters. It's got the same idea, but it's like two wrestlers called the Barbarian Brothers.
Oh my God.
They just babysit a couple of bratty twins, and that reminded me so much of Mr. Nanny, but it was so painful. I couldn't get past 10 minutes.
Yeah, it was like, probably like... it was probably like the remake for the first Mr. Nanny remake or some shit.
It's like the Asylum mockbuster version of the Nanny.
Indeed. But yeah.
I actually remember that movie. I'd never seen it, but I always remember, like, the video cover up at the video shop, and yeah.
Yeah.
It looked pretty bad.
Enough about that. I'm going to pick on Pauly Shore again with a movie I hated even more than Biodome, which was Jury Duty. What can I say about this movie? It's just it's an abomination. It really is. It's just so crap. I can't even describe
it. Jury Duty, because what 12 Angry Men was missing was Pauly Shore.
Indeed. I mean, I don't even... What was the story? He becomes a juror. And happens.
I actually seen this one recently. And, like, he gets kicked out of his house by his mum, so he has to, like... He has to go find a new place, and he gets caught up in jury duty, and he just stays at the motel and all that. And yeah, from there, it's
about nothing. And yeah.
And they have to bring so 12 bad. Angry Men into it by showing it on TV over and over again.
It's just so fucking retarded. And watching it, I just wanted to smack my head with something. You lose precious brain cells watching crap like this. So bad, so bad. But that's all Pauly Shore did was shit.
And Stanley Tucci was in that movie too.
Poor Stanley Tucci.
And Tia Carrere, I think her career pretty much ended after this movie.
Well, she hasn't really had that much of a career, to be honest. So, yeah. Anyway, they're my 5 and 4, and I'll give it to AJ for his 5 and 4 picks.
Okay, my 5 and 4 picks. First of all, my number 5, I have to say, first of all, as some of you might know, my all-time favorite movie is A Christmas Story. I've seen it the most out of every movie. It means so much to me, and mostly because all the elements that came together during filming were done right. It's just a perfect movie where every single thing is done just right. And then they had to make a sequel with Charles Grodin called My Summer Story. And to be fair, it wasn't trying to top A Christmas Story. It was just, it's a couple years down the road. Let's try and revisit these characters. But it just does not work. There is no magic in there. The whole story, the title is pretty much what it is. Instead of Christmas, it's the crap Ralphie does, who's played by one of the Culkin kids this time. So is Randy, and his parents are Charles Grodin and Mary Steenburgen. And it's just crap he does during the summer. Like, he wants to get a new top to fight the neighborhood bully with. Like, that's the whole driving thing of the movie. He wants a top.
Wow.
And there's just so much talent involved because it's the same director. Gene Shepard came back to help, write the script and do the narration. Like, even the teacher from the original, Miss Shields, they got the same actress. But just nothing happens. It was like watching The Sting 2, where you just kind of wonder, why did you even try? You had a perfect movie, and that so rarely happens. And to just try and do it again just shouldn't be attempted. You got the lightning in a bottle, and just nothing worked about it. It was just so boring. None of the jokes worked. It was not endearing, and it was an absolute pain to watch. It was like a car exploding in slow motion over the course of 90 minutes. You're just powerless to do anything about it.
You sound very, very hurt by this.
I am.
There.
From the show.
Well, I haven't seen it, so I can't really comment. And everyone's gone silent. I guess no one else has seen it.
I haven't seen it, so.
Yeah.
I haven't seen A Christmas Story.
What's that?
Yeah.
I haven't even seen A Christmas Story, let alone this one.
Yeah, sorry.
Sam, you ignorant slut, get to the store right now, rent A Christmas Story. I care.
Maybe it's Christmas.
Yeah, I think I'll wait for Christmas and I'll hire A Christmas Story.
I've seen it. Christmas Story, it's a great film. You guys will like it.
I haven't seen it, but it's
the principle of the thing.
But it sounds interesting.
All right, let's move on from that. My number 4 pick, I'm not sure if this might be on Bede's list here, because we have talked about this a number of times. I refuse to let it die, no matter, hush, Bede, please, to just put it under. And it's a little film from Australia. I believe you might know it. It's called Welcome to Whoop Whoop.
You son of a bitch. That was my number one.
I'll leave Bede to rant about it for number one, since he'll pretty much say the exact same things I will. But all I have to say in regards to Welcome to Whoop Whoop is screw you, Australia. You and your whole continent can just jump off a fucking cliff for this movie.
That's very cruel.
Yeah, well, personally, I can't see what she sees in a hippie-looking numbat like you, but I won't let that fuck me up. I'll give you the benefit of the doubt.
So is the movie.
I'm sorry, an entire continent can jump off a cliff for this movie, and it's your number four?
Oh, yeah.
It's the worst Australian film he has ever seen.
I'm looking forward to number one.
All right. That's AJ's 5 and 4. Let's go for Sam's 5 and 4.
Okay, at number 5, I've got Junior, which is obviously kind of a spiritual follow-up to Twins, which had the same leads, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Danny DeVito, and the same director, Ivan Reitman. And, you know, Twins has its charms. It's probably, aside from Junior, my least favourite of Arnie's comedies. You know, I actually quite like Kindergarten Cop and Last Action Hero. But Junior is just, from its premise on down, the stuff of nightmares. Arnold Schwarzenegger is pregnant.
Throughout history, many famous pregnancies have occurred. Demi Moore, Princess Diana, Arnold Schwarzenegger. Arnold Schwarzenegger?
That's all you need to know.
Imagine the meeting where somebody actually greenlit this. I've got it. It's really funny. Arnie's pregnant.
Yeah, they figured, oh, it's comedy gold.
Give that man $30 million.
Oh, yeah, I'm not a fan of this movie at all.
But there's one sequence, and again, I'm sort of drawing from the Nostalgia Critic here, because he mentions it in his review. There's one sequence where Arnie, who has just become pregnant, and he has a dream about his baby.
Oh, God.
And it is... it's a baby with Arnold Schwarzenegger's face digitally put onto it. And it will haunt your dreams.
You're killing me right now.
Terrifying.
Mama!
Oh, God, yeah. There you go. It's genuinely one of the most disturbing things in any of his films. It's up there with the Terminator extracting its own eye.
I just can't believe
that somebody put it in a movie. Add to that the fact that it's not funny and wastes Emma Thompson, but yeah, it just baffles me.
Yeah.
I have to admit, I thought the movie was okay, but yeah, that scene was pretty terrifying.
Or when he's like doing the Lamar's class and he's got a wig on, like, yeah, I'm so going to believe he's a woman. Come on. So dumb.
Yes. Just why is my question, really.
Yeah, pure torture, I think.
When you can make Jingle All the Way look dignified in comparison, wow, you have...
Another really, not a fan
Jingle
of that one.
The Way is insultingly bad as well.
Yeah, it is. Actually, it should have been a dishonourable mention, but, you know, too late now. Moving on.
Number four. Tom and Jerry the movie.
Tom and Jerry had a movie?
Yeah. I love Tom and Jerry, particularly the Hanna-Barbera, Fred Quimby stuff. Just as a kid and still now, just absolutely kills me. I think it's one of the funniest things I've ever seen. And the thing with the movie is it's not Tom and Jerry. First of all, they don't fight. Second of all, they don't talk, but they actually talk.
Yeah.
And they also sing.
Yeah.
And thirdly, well, the animation's terrible. They don't look like Tom and Jerry. But what's really... strangers, did anyone see A Serious Man last year?
I did, yeah.
Not yet, no.
You remember the uncle who's always hiding in the bathroom, draining the ulcer on his back?
Yeah, Richard Kind was the voice.
That's Tom's voice.
I remember that, yeah.
Who thinks Tom sounds like that? It's just bizarre. But the fact that they, you know, try and wed it to this, you know, this mixed up story about a little orphan girl trying to find her dad and two unscrupulous animal catchers who want to catch Tom and Jerry and sell them for a reward or something like that. And that they have Tom and Jerry become friends. I mean, that's the ultimate insult. Tom and Jerry is about a cat and a mouse trying to kill each other in slapstick ways. And that's it. I mean, it doesn't need to be a movie. 90 minutes of that is clearly too much. But who thought that completely changing the entire point of the characters was a good thing? I mean, I was 11 when this movie came out. I should have been right slap in the target audience. And even when I was 11 and had no taste, I hated this movie.
Yeah, it sounds pretty shit.
I haven't seen it since I was a kid, so I can't really say too much about it.
Same here.
Well, considering I just discovered it existed, it disgusts me by the sounds of it.
And there's like a couple of direct-to-DVD sequels as well.
Yeah, I think I prefer to watch the old school cartoons because they were fun.
Yeah, Hanna-Barbera.
I think Bede, you haven't gone yet, have you?
No, I haven't gone yet.
Five and four. Okay, your turn. Five and four. Good.
Okay, my five and four. Actually, these two films have a common link because they both star the same actor. And when I mean actor, I'm actually putting my fingers up in the air, doing the double sign.
You mean not exactly an actor.
No, he's not exactly an actor because he's more of a sportsman, a basketball player, in fact, and that is Shaquille O'Neal. And the first of which is Kazam.
I thought it was Shazam.
Oh, get it.
Kazam. Whoops, I'm dumb.
Kazam was...
Such a shithouse movie.
It is. Like, it's... This movie, one of the things I do... Like, it's been a while since I've seen it, but... Oh, man. One of the things I remember about this movie is that it's probably one of the most tonally uneven family films I have ever seen. Like, it starts off being like this, you know, sort of comedy, and then by the last half of the movie, it becomes a completely different movie entirely. I mean, tonally, it becomes really dramatic. I mean, it feels like a dramatic thriller or something in the last half of the movie, and it just, oh, man. And the fact that Shaquille O'Neal plays a 7-foot genie. And instead of coming out of, like, a magic lamp, he comes out of a magic boombox.
Oh, that totally fucking ruled, man.
And he wants to become, like, a rapper.
Yeah, the movie makes, like, total sense, man.
Really, when I was watching, I was really zoning out of it, even though I was paying attention, but not quite. So I don't remember most of the little bits in the movie, but I just remembered that it was just such a pain to watch. So terrible.
And don't forget the bad guy being crushed down to a basketball and dunked down like a garbage chute.
Oh, man.
Jesus Christ. Yeah.
Like that's one of those moments where, like, you have to imagine the writer typing that out and then wondering, how is this going to play on film? And then they're like, no, fuck it. They'll buy it. This is for 11-year-olds. They'll buy any of this shit.
Even at 11, this movie was like, what the fuck am I watching?
It is kind of a bit of a what the fuck kind of movie, because, like, a lot of aspects of the film do not make sense.
No.
And if you act, because I didn't see this movie when I was a kid. I think I saw it about 2 years ago. And so it was so jarring just how tonally uneven it was. And like I said, starts off as a comedy, and by the last half, it turns into a dramatic thriller. And
overall, it's a piece of shit. Woohoo!
Yeah, crap writing, crap direction, and
crappy O'Neal. No.
And what's funny is I'm just looking it up on Wikipedia now, and the same guy who directed also directed The Running Man.
Wow!
Oh, wow!
And also The Air Up There.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so... And those weren't too bad of movies, but this one's just a piece of crap.
It's a pretty bad movie.
Yeah.
It's pretty bad that it's number 99 on IMDb's bottom 100.
And now my number four, and this one came out a year after Kazam, and again, it stars Shaquille O'Neal, and it's probably, in my opinion, the worst superhero ever made, superhero film ever made, and that is Steel.
I never want to see this movie.
Yeah, it's... If you thought Kazam was a chore to sit through, Steel was much worse.
Shaquille O'Neal, Steel.
And, like, the thing is, I don't know much about the Steel character. I know a little bit of his background, like, but in the they change it in the movie, and because, like, in the... From what I gather, I could be completely wrong about this, so forgive me, comic book fans out there, but, like, Steel was... Steel sort of came about because he was saved by Superman, and so he decided to become a superhero himself. And since Superman couldn't be in this movie, so they just changed it all around, and, just to show how credible this movie is, Shaquille O'Neal was cast as a weapons designer.
You're killing me. Seriously.
For the military, and so... And the bad guy in the movie was played by Judd Nelson.
Oh, God. You're killing me even more.
And, like, his costume is, like, the worst costume of all time.
And, you know, it was directed by the dude that created the original and the new V series. That's really odd.
Oh, man.
Go ahead.
No, you go first.
Oh, I was actually going to say, I was looking up Steel on Wikipedia the other day. Do not ask me why these things happen. But I had read that, yeah, a lot of the what happened in the movie was the director's choosing, because he didn't want to make a traditional superhero movie. So he just kind of took Steel and just glossed him over with all the different aspects that were of his design. And, yeah, from what I hear, the movie and the comic character are two, like, wildly different properties.
Yeah. Like I said, I don't know much about the Steel character. Even I agree with that. Like, if I was a fan of Steel, and I don't know how many fans of Steel are out there, but I would be really pissed off with this movie. I mean, this movie, like, 97 was not a good year for comic book movies. Because Batman and Robin... Spawn, those were like light years better than this movie. Oh, Steel was just terrible. And like I said, the costume is just completely horrible. And it's like, you know, like in Superman, like people always make fun of Clark Kent's disguise because all he has to do is like take his glasses off and he's like Superman. And in this movie, it's like, there's like, oh, I wonder who Steel could be. I mean, seriously, you don't know any 7 foot tall black guys who hang around you all the time.
Now, I've got to correct you on something with Superman and Clark Kent. There's more to it than the glasses.
Oh, sorry.
And that is for a Superman-related podcast.
Yep.
And I'm not going to go into it now, but I'm telling you off. You've okay, been I'm, told.
I'm sorry.
All right.
But it's a terrible movie nobody ever should
see. Well, yeah, I really don't want to see Steel. Ever. All right. Moving along, let's do number three. I'll go first. And I'm choosing for my number three, Look Who's Talking Now, which was the third movie in the Look Who's Talking series. And this one was about the relationship of the family's dogs, and they talk to each other. And I don't get it, and it is one of the worst movies that John Travolta has made, and he has made some stinkers, as we know very well, but yeah, I just don't get this movie, and I don't know why they made it. It was terrible. Really just crap.
Been a long time since I've seen it, but it seemed to me like it was a cash cow, so they were just like milking the series for all it's worth. Since the kids have grown up, we can't do babies anymore. Let's use animals instead.
Well, it's so stupid, and I remember the first two. I mean, I think it was the first one was okay, the second one was okay, but this was just like, yeah, what the f- fuck are you on?
Really? Who was it embarrassing themselves as the dogs? Was it Danny DeVito and...
Diane Keaton.
Diane Keaton? No.
Yes.
Oh, that's just sad.
Yes, it is.
I'd be more surprised at Diane Keaton if she hadn't showed up in some of the other worst movies I've ever seen, but those are for more of like the 2000s. And this is the 90s show.
Something's Gotta Give is appalling.
I'm thinking more because I said so. That,
I agree, but yeah, that one was terrible.
I haven't seen either of those, so no comment. But yeah, look who's talking now. I fucking hate you, and I would gladly use the DVD or the VHS as toilet paper. That's my number three.
That sounds painful.
Yeah, it probably would be, but yeah, ugh, God.
It would be better than watching the movie again for you, Marty.
Yeah, probably. It would be less painful. Yeah, but yeah, that's my number three, and I'll send it over AJ for his third pick.
All right, my number three pick is Dice Rules, and if anyone out there listening is unfamiliar with this, there was at some point during the 90s when everyone decided that Andrew Dice Clay should be famous. I want to personally hunt down and curb stomp every one of those dumb assholes for giving this guy even a single ounce of fame. It's like, you look at like Paris Hilton today and wonder why she's famous. And like this, like Andrew Dice Clay, that was like the 90s Paris Hilton. He was a comedian, and his entire routine is that he would swear, or like he would do like a nursery rhyme and he would swear, and then like that was it. Like Carlos Mencia is a like merciless joke thief, but at least he's stolen from good comedians, so his jokes are like still somewhat funny by proxy. This guy was just dead for material, just a complete black hole of comedy. Nothing funny whatsoever. And I believe Dice Rules, it was filmed at Madison Square Garden, sold out, where he was just on stage parading around with just no jokes whatsoever. He would just said, he was like a kid who just found out what fuck means, and he's just saying it over and over to get a rise. And the audience is there to just give him what he wants, give him the response that he wants. And this is just one of the most unfunny, loathsome, like unclean movies that I have ever seen.
That does not sound very appealing.
No.
Everyone's gone quiet.
Well, we haven't seen it.
No, I'm afraid I've heard the name, but I don't know his stuff at all. And it sounds like I've dodged the bullet on that score.
Like, yeah. like here's a basic routine of his. He'd go like, Mary had a little lamb, so I fucked her. Oh, like that was the routine. That's his joke. Imagine that for 90 minutes.
I'm sorry. Did he fuck the lamb or did he fuck Mary?
I don't know.
I mean, neither of those is funny.
Either one. Like, even, I don't even think he knows. He just said it like, hey, I said fuck.
Clarity's important.
The closest thing I've got to an Andrew Dice Clay film was like The Adventures of Paul Feig. So yeah, now it's gone all quiet again.
I was just thinking Ford Fairlane.
Yeah,
I can't. Yeah. I sort of remember that, but I don't remember that being remotely.
From the master of cinema subtlety, Rennie Harlan.
Oh, Rennie. Anyway. Crazy, man. Yeah.
Dice Rules is horrible.
So, huh? Say that again?
I said Dice Rules is horrible. It just depresses me. Like, I'm going to kill myself by the end of this podcast. I'm just in such, like, a depressing quagmire. I just want to die right now.
I shouldn't be laughing at that.
Yeah, why am I laughing?
But we've just been talking about Andrew Dice Clay, so anything's funny, really.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that is true. Okay, since AJ's done his and I've done mine, I think it's Beeb's turn or Sam's turn. No, I think it's Sam's turn.
Yep.
I'm trying to remember.
Okay, in a stunning shock and surprise, Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare.
Oh, I didn't know that was coming.
Yeah, I didn't see that one coming. I actually like the Nightmare series, which is probably not borne out by the fact that we've talked about bad movies last time, both the last couple of times I was on the podcast, and I've picked a Nightmare movie both times. But I do actually like this series, and it just saddens me to see it, you know, end disintegrate up at a place like Freddy's Dead.
Yeah.
I think maybe my least favourite thing, and the thing that's sort of symptomatic of the whole movie, is the first time Freddy appears.
On the broomstick, first of all, isn't it?
He looks like a total train wreck. You know, the makeup was so good on the first film, and it deteriorated all the way through, and now he literally looks like he's got egg on his face. It's like just Robert Englund slightly melted. And there's no character to it. He doesn't even really look like Freddy. Add to that the fact that it's a fantasy sequence. He's got a witch's hat on, is riding a broom, and says to the people he's pursuing, "I'll get you, my pretty, and your little soul too."
Yes, he watched The Wizard of Oz a few too many times, I'm afraid.
You're 2 minutes into the movie and already it's like the end of everything, you know? No! Actually, it probably starts even earlier than that with the opening quotes. There's a great Nietzsche quote about nightmares that opens the film. And then it's followed 10 seconds later by the death of all your optimism when the second quote that comes up on screen is, "Welcome to primetime, bitch." I mean, need I say more? One of the main action sequences in the film isn't actually an action sequence. It's essentially a clip from a Nintendo game with Freddy sitting in a chair for 10 minutes going, "Ha ha ha ha," and cracking terrible jokes. It's like somebody decided to marry up the worst stand-up routine of all time with a terrible Looney Tunes cartoon and put Freddy in it.
Yeah.
I can't figure it out.
Do you know what really was just... the one thing I think that I didn't really like on the Never Sleep Again documentary was they didn't really acknowledge just how shit this film was, and they actually were talking about the film as if it were any good. And I'm just thinking, no, this movie's terrible. How can you even say some of this stuff?
Particularly like, when they acknowledge the gay subtext of part two.
Well, yeah, part two, they're all like, oh, yeah, you know, it's got this gay stuff and this and that. And, you know, they fully go into it like they've never done before, but they just don't say, like, how shit this movie is and how retarded it was.
What depresses me the most is that, like, in Never Sleep Again, when they start talking about Freddy's Dead, like, they went with Freddy's Dead, and they didn't go with the Peter Jackson treatment called the Dream Lover, which sounded like a really awesome idea. They looked at that and said, no, thanks. We'll take Freddy's Dead. We're going to do this instead.
I know.
I think the difference is that the Dream Lover sounded rather expensive. And the thing about the Nightmare films is that their budgets actually fell each film.
Yes.
Up until seven.
You know, so. Freddy on a broomstick just totally works, man.
And you know what's really strange about this movie? It has so many cameos from so many people. I mean, Roseanne's in there, Tom Arnold's in there, Alice Cooper's in there, and even Johnny Depp came back to do a cameo in this movie.
And I'm sure he's been kicking himself ever since.
Yep.
Yeah, it's interesting. It actually means that At World's End isn't the most incoherent thing Johnny Depp's been in.
I'm not going to comment on those movies. all right. I think it's Bede's turn for three.
Okay.
I believe.
My number three is the remake of The Vanishing.
I fucking hate
Good
you!
Cool, sir.
I fucking hate that movie so much. Did I pick that as like number one worst remake or number two worst remake on one of those podcasts?
Oh, it was number two. That was like our second podcast we ever did together. Yeah. Last year. I think it was your number two.
It was number two because The Day the Earth Stood Still was number one for shitness of remakes. But fuck me, this movie sucks ass.
Yeah. Like, think of everything that was good about the original Vanishing, and you watch this and they just completely destroy it in one fatal swoop.
And the thing is, it's freaking by the same person.
Yep.
He remade his own movie and he turned it into a piece of shit.
Mm. I'll tell you the two main things that I really hated about this movie. Number one, Jeff Bridges. Now, I love Jeff Bridges. He's a great actor. But no, he was terrible in this movie. And I'll tell you guys why. In the original Vanishing movie, I can't remember the actor who played...
I just wrote about it. His name's Bernard Pierre Donadieu.
Oh, okay. I'm glad you know and have got good pronunciation, because I would have been like, his name is a blah, 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 blah.
But, I'm just trying to remember what his character's name was in the original.
Raymond.
Raymond, that's it. In the original, one of the creepy things about the character of Raymond is that he was just played normal. Like, he wasn't played for any kind of creep factor whatsoever, and that was what made the character so interesting and creepy and disturbing, is that he just played him as a normal person like you or me. But Jeff Bridges, on the other hand, he just played that creep factor just beyond the point of no return. I mean, seriously, if you saw this guy for the first time, you think, yeah, this guy is a serial killer.
Yeah, and the point is, you're not supposed to think that, because it's supposed to be like the guy next door. You wouldn't expect...
Yeah.
You know, like, as if it could be that dude.
Yeah, and if I was, like, his wife and his child, I'd be, like, running for the hills. I mean, why would they stay with him? I'd be terrified of him. He was just, I said, Jeff Bridges, brilliant actor, but just, like, his approach to the character was just completely wrong in so many ways, and it's terrible.
He was, like, one handlebar mustache away from a silent film.
Yeah. And of course, the main thing is they decided to go with a happy ending with this one.
Yeah, and that's just... Ugh.
It's the ultimate insult.
Yeah, it's like a big kick up the ass. Like, the original is... There's probably, like, one of the only movies, and I don't know if there's, like, another podcast, that actually really, truly frightens me and scares me, and I don't think I could ever watch it again. And they managed to just fuck all that up with this remake. It's so fucking... Ugh.
The original ending was just so terrifying and so haunting at the same time. But this, they do the exact same thing. But of course, you know, they decided, we can't do that again. Let's make a happy ending so we don't disturb the audience. And
yeah, they tend to do that. They can't handle, a bleak ending.
This is the whole point. The whole point of the Vanishing is to disturb the audience. And they completely undermine it.
Yeah, like, and when they just completely destroy it, like, completely destroy the two most disturbing aspects of the film, like the character of Raymond and the ending, the movie ends up being pointless and just does not work at all.
Yeah, it's blah, fuck off movie.
Yeah, it's terrible.
come on, we're Americans, our feelings might get hurt.
Yes, bloody Americans destroying
your own. Yeah, you can't handle anything. Oh, man. All right.
Sorry, AJ, but it had to be said.
Yeah. All right. Okay, I'm going to go for number two and number one now. Okay, so my number two is... and AJ knows what this is because I told him about it yesterday. It's a movie called... The Forbidden Dance?
From the jungles of the Amazon to the heart of America.
Trying not to laugh to talk about this movie.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear, dear, dear.
I have no idea what the hell is.
This movie... Oh, gosh. This movie, it was made when the Lambada dance craze, which lasted like 2 weeks... in the early 90s was around, and they made this, like, dancing movie, but it's trying to be, like this environment movie about saving the rainforest, and it's very insulting to, I believe it's very insulting to Brazilians. Let me try and explain it a little bit better. There's an Amazon tribe, I believe, and their home is getting destroyed by the evil, the big evil company that wants to, you know, destroy the rainforest. And the princess of the tribe and her witch doctor, and these two roles are played by Laura Herring and Sid Haig. They go to America, and I don't know what the fuck they think they're going to do. I think they want to talk the guy out of destroying the rainforest or some crap, but obviously it doesn't work, and the princess ends up meeting this lady who gets her a job as a maid, and while she's a maid for a day, she meets their son, Jason, and he takes her out dancing, and then she realizes that, oh, we've got to, like, win this dancing contest to get on TV to tell everybody about not destroying the rainforest. And they...
So it's Ferngully meets the Lambada.
Well, yeah. Kind of, and it's just, like... The relationship between the princess and the guy, they're, like, totally fall in love in the span of, like, an hour. In the meantime, like, she gets fired. Well, she runs away from being a maid because the mum and dad found out that she went out with the son, and she goes to, like, this not exactly a strip club thing, and she dances there, and it's all kind of sleazy, and, oh, God, it's just, it's... so bad. I watched it yesterday. I think it was yesterday, and I remember watching it as a kid, and as a kid it was like, yeah, it's not bad, but watching it again it's like, fuck me, this is so bad.
Oh, I tell you what's interesting. I was reading the AV Club before we started doing this.
Yeah.
And the My Year of Flops column is doing a month of Lambada movies. Ugh. So I thought, I have a feeling this might be the next My Year of Flops.
It probably would be. There was another movie that AJ reminded me of called Lambada. And
that's the one they did this week.
Yeah, and this one and that one, they actually got released on the same day, according to IMDb. The only thing that is okay in this movie is the fact that Laura Herring looks really hot. Because, you know, this was, like, 20 years ago, so she's really young. But that's about it. It's so bad. The acting is terrible. The dancing isn't even really that good. And Sid Haig, he's, like, the witch doctor. And he, like, he can growl like a tiger. And apparently, when you sprain your ankle, a snake bite can heal you. The fantastic logic of the Forbidden Dance.
It's moments like those that I would actually give the Forbidden Dance over the edge of Lambada, because, like, for the weirdness factor alone, Forbidden Dance wins it, because the other one, the one that's just called Lambada, that's like an inspirational drama where the teacher's trying to help his kids, but he's really a dancer at night, but he can't tell any about it, because Lambada's too edgy for the school to handle. And it's just really, really boring. Meanwhile, there's some crazy shit going on in Forbidden Dance. It's shit, but at least it's crazy shit.
Yeah, it's completely just, what the fuck is going on? It's just, oh my God. It's just one of those movies like, I got no idea why I'm watching this. It's just, I can't even explain it. It's just, it's watching like, a really bad train wreck. And the bad guy, like the guy who's going to destroy the rainforest, he's played by Richard Lynch, and he's such a weird-looking guy. And, oh, God, he's like... The way he acts in this movie, it's like he's taking it seriously at one point, but then he knows it's kind of campy and he plays it to that, and it's like really weird. But yeah, this movie is just there was so much potential to save the rainforest, but I think it killed the rainforest, I'm afraid.
This is what we did before we had blogs and internet. Whenever we had an issue to work out, you had to enter a dancing competition, get on TV, win it, and then tell people about it. That's how you got over.
That's what you had to do. You had to do a sexy dance, which turned out not to be
that
sexy.
Why nobody ever listens to me, because I can't dance.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how I solve all my problems.
Yeah, I totally like won 3 dance contests today to, you know, speak out about my issues. Yeah.
I'm doing one right after this podcast.
Yeah, and you're doing it with the pole.
I'll get him to fill that pothole in. Shake me your moneymaker, Bead.
I'm disturbed. What possibly could be more disturbing than those comments is my number one, and that is Batman and Robin.
Tonight's forecast, a freeze is coming.
What a surprise. Dun, dun, dun. What a surprise. I hate this movie with a passion. It's an insult to Batman. It's an insult to nipples. It's just blah.
That's my favourite sentence of the day. It's an insult to nipples.
I would put that quote on the DVD cover. An insult to nipples, Marcy.
Well, I mean, this was like brought up today.
I'm still laughing.
I'm like crying of laughter over this. It was brought up today. How come Batman has nipples on his suit and Batgirl doesn't have them? You'd think the chick would, you know, possibly have nipples on her outfit, but no.
Joel Schumacher is gender biased.
Oh, this movie is so fucking bad.
The movie would have been better if Batgirl had nipples on her suit.
Well, it would have made more sense than Batman having nipples on his bat suit.
Or like the sculpted ass.
Yeah, oh, I was just about to say, that's even more disturbing. The shots of them suiting up at the beginning where you get them pulling up the sculpted asses. Really bizarre.
And the amount of lines that Arnold has as Mr. Freeze, which refers to ice and cold and frozen shit. It's ridiculous.
Freeze in hell!
Ice to see you. That's my favourite.
Tonight's
forecast, a breeze is coming.
My condition has left you me cold to your pleas of mercy.
All right, everybody, chill.
I'm seriously crying of laughter. You're not sending me to the cooler.
Hey, cool bad boy.
What killed the dinosaurs? The Ice Age!
Like, half of them don't even make any sense. They won't even apply to the situation. Freeze in hell? What? No! And that's during the big dramatic climax. And he just screams it out like he's like this big important piece of dialogue. You're like, Arnold, no! You're one step away from put that cookie down.
It's not like Arnold really had much dignity to lose in the first place, though, let's be fair.
Well, he did come off junior.
Or to lose.
Oh man.
God, I hate this movie.
The best
Why is everything neon in Joel Schumacher's movies, by the way? Just out of interest.
Because he loves neon lights.
I don't know. Hey,
clearly.
This movie.
Is the Phantom of the Opera like that?
I don't know. I haven't seen.
Yeah, is that movie drenched in neon too? Because, I mean, it's only slightly less appropriate to that film than Batman.
And you know what? I'm going to take this avenue to make a very counter statement. I still say that Batman and Robin is a more entertaining movie than Batman Returns. I'm going to get lynched for that.
No.
Yeah, I'm lynching you right now.
Like, I will say this, Batman and Robin is more entertaining than Steel. That's all I'm going to say.
Fair enough.
Excuse me, but Michelle Pfeiffer in the Catwoman outfit is definitely all the entertainment that I think anyone needs.
Yeah.
Batman Returns is, like, too depressing. Like, Dark Knight and Batman Begins, they nailed the darkness of Batman. But Batman Returns, it was just way too far. Like, Tim Burton forgot that Batman could be fun. And it was just so boring and so, like, too depressing.
No, I'm sorry. How can you dismiss the fun of Christopher Walken's performance in that movie?
Like, he tried.
Or in any movie, but, you know.
I'll give you that Walken tried.
Well, Andrew Benarski doing, like, his best Christopher Walken impression was really hilarious. Like, he played the son.
Yeah.
Okay, I just lost everybody.
I was too busy thinking about Catwoman. Sorry. Meow.
I think
you're still stuck on last week's podcast, Marcy.
Yes.
I will say this. The best thing that Batman and Robin ever did for humanity is for us getting a Riff Trax version of it.
A glorious Riff Trax version.
The best, it's like the first, like one of my favorite parts of the Riff Trax version is like that, like it's one of the first scenes where Batman is sort of waiting for the Batmobile to pop up and it just has a close up of him and it's like one of Mike Nelson just goes, "Hello, I'm George Clooney and I'm sorry."
Has anyone seen it with Joel Schumacher's commentary? Because I want to buy the DVD just to hear that.
Apparently.
And to find out if it really is what it should be, 2 hours of him saying sorry.
Well, I heard somewhere he apologizes in the documentary that accompanies it on the DVD and Blu-ray.
I don't remember that, but I did. I must admit, I did fall asleep because it was really late and I was tired. But I was listening to him talk about Batman Forever, and he didn't seem to really be apologizing for that one. But that one, in my opinion, isn't as bad as this one.
Mm. Batman Forever
has a good go.
Yeah. At least it's more watchable than Batman and Robin, though.
I just want to forget this movie exists in the Batman universe.
Exactly. Let's forget about it right now.
Yes.
Blech. Sorry, what were we talking about before?
How it was insulting to nipples.
Oh, okay, yeah. That was supposed to be...
It's the nipples, people.
It's the nipples.
Oh, man. Anyway, AJ, you're number two and number one.
All right, my number two pick, and this is sort of like an unofficial nostalgia critic revival, because my number two pick is another movie that he deservedly tore into, and it is I can't even begin to describe the badness, levels of badness that this movie achieves. It's called North.
Oh man.
I've never seen it. I've always sort of wanted to.
And as the Nostalgia Critic describes in his review, was pretty much how I reacted. I saw the trailer for it. I remember seeing it when I was a kid. And the whole premise is Elijah Wood wants to, like, get new parents, divorce his old parents, and get new ones. Like, okay, seems harmless enough. Then you see Siskel and Ebert launching into this movie like it murdered their whole entire family. Like, the level of hatred they had for him. And you're like, this can't be. It just looks like a harmless movie. How could it be possible?
Played by Elijah Wood, gets fed up with his folks in that scene from North and decides that since they don't pay attention to him, he will divorce them and go looking for a new set of parents. And that's the setup for one of the most thoroughly hateful movies of recent years, a movie that makes me cringe even when I'm sitting here thinking about it.
Then you watch it, and it's just one stereotype after another. There is absolutely no subtlety to this movie. Everything that it sets out to do, it tries to do by just bashing you over the head with it. It's morals, it's comedy, it's just so overbearing is that you just want to flee from your zip code within like 10 minutes of it. And like the worst part is sort of like what Bean had said earlier about Kazam, is that it starts out as this goofy movie, but then it gets increasingly more dramatic to the point where North's best friend is like this powerful kid now, and he hires a hitman to kill North for wanting to reunite with his parents. And that's another time where you're like, what are they thinking? What made them think that this would play out truly on film, to go from Reba McEntire and Dan Aykroyd as the most cartoonish Texans you've ever seen in a movie to We must kill this boy who wants to just love his parents. There's just no tact to this movie, and it is really insulting. It's just, oh, God. Oh,
I have a question.
Okay.
What happened to the Rob Reiner who made Spinal Tap and The Sure Thing and The Princess Bride?
Well, this movie pretty much killed his career, pretty much. Like, he had a good string of great movies, and then he made this one, and then, yeah, he hasn't recovered ever since.
And it's like, but, like, he did this, and then the next year he did The American President, which I really liked, and for me, that was the last time we saw, like, the classic Rob Reiner, the Stand By Me, Sure Thing Rob Reiner. Like, the American President, that was his last one. He's gone. But then again, he hasn't made anything as truly awful as North was. I don't know what the hell anybody was thinking making that movie.
Yeah, and that one was nominated for quite a few Razzies.
Deserved each and every fucking one of
indeed,
them.
Indeed, indeed.
But, all right, my number one pick, and as I was mentioning to Bede, Marcy, and Sam, is that I have something of a little confession to make, because I consider myself a movie purist. I set out to watch a movie. I am going to finish it as much as I want to just take off. I sat through Bratz. I sat through Son of the Mask. I sat through Sex in the City 2 and Marmaduke and Mamma Mia. I lasted through those. But this movie, I had, I think I made it through 20 minutes before I made the conscious decision, no, this movie is offending so much that I'm going to turn it off and never look at it again. And it's called Lawn Dogs.
What? No. Sorry. What? I love that movie.
And this was 1998 that this happened. When I was 13 and just coming into my own as a movie fan, I was watching everything. I remember I watched The Players Club with Ice Cube and Jamie Foxx right before seeing this movie. And I made it through that, but Long Dogs, I could not finish it. And I just barely remember the premise. It's like set in suburbia, and it's got Sam Rockwell as like this gardener, and Christopher McDonald, well, he's the asshole because he's the asshole in every movie he's ever been in his entire career. He's played more assholes than Rufus Sewell has played villains at this point. And it's from what I remember, it just tried to be some sort of commentary on like loneliness and suburbia, and I just could not take it. And
once upon a time, in a far off land, lived a girl and her mother and father.
I barely remember why. I think it was this one scene where, like, Christopher McDonald offered Sam Rockwell a hot dog, and because there was like a picnic or something, and then Sam Rockwell came for his payment. And he's like, he deducted $20 or so. He's like, well, I gave you lunch, didn't I? And at the point where, like, his daughter, Christopher McDonald's daughter, is, like, sitting on her roof, I think, like, naked and howling at the moon, I'm like, no, enough, no, not even going to finish. And I have no desire to ever finish this movie. I just can't stand it. So Lawn Dogs, number one stinker of the 90s.
I'm genuinely baffled. I mean, really, I cannot believe it. I honestly don't know what to say other than you really have to give it another chance. I'll tell you why on the blog soon, because it actually will be appearing in my Top 100 series. I love this movie. I think it's actually quite a perceptive movie about friendship and between, you know, two people you wouldn't expect. Because you didn't actually get to this part, but it's really about the friendship between Misha Barton and Sam Rockwell's characters, and the way that this, you know, small gated community completely misunderstands that. And it has its moments where it's a little overdramatic, particularly towards the end, but it's really quite sensitively played. Sam Rockwell's very, very good in it. I think it's a really interesting little movie. I really think you ought to give it another chance, actually, because I'm genuinely baffled that you could hate it that much.
I haven't seen it, but I was wanting to, mainly because it's a Sam Rockwell movie that I haven't seen, and he's like one of my, you know, like one of Marcy's husbands.
I might give it a chance. It's not at the top of my list because there's just something about it, and like, and there's just the way you described it. I can see why people would like it, but just hearing you like describe like what happens later on, I'm getting this picture in my head, and I'm not sure I want to watch it to see if what it is. It's true because it just seems like another overbearing movie. But I'll never say no. I might give this a chance someday, but it'll take a while.
Well, I say if I'm willing to give The Descent another chance, you should give this another chance.
The DVD's deleted, AJ, but if I find another copy, I will send it to you.
I'll think about it. I'll see if I can scrounge one up around
here. Interesting. All right. Since AJ's on his, Sam can do his now.
Okay, number two is a movie that I think should kind of unite people again. In that I think most people counted it as one of the most disappointing film experiences of their youth, and that's Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace. And it's interesting, I don't love the Star Wars movies at all, even the original trilogy. I know, flog me, hang me, whatever. But it is kind of tied up with my childhood. I mean, one of my abiding memories is that we found out that I needed glasses because I was sitting so close to Star Wars because I couldn't see it otherwise. So, you know, it really is totally tied up with my childhood. And I think that's kind of the problem because when Episode One came out, I was 17 going on 18. And it quite clearly wasn't for me anymore. But I don't think it's for kids either. Because, and this is the thing that really sort of was so miscalculated to me. It's a movie about tax.
Yeah.
Why would you make, I mean, it literally starts off with a policy meeting between aliens about tax. It's like if the West Wing, on the West Wing, you know, Bartlett and Josh suddenly had to go and have a lightsaber fight to save Donna. That doesn't work. Why would you put tax in Star Wars?
Suffering.
To say nothing of the, you know, offensive racial stereotyping. You know, the tax-obsessed aliens are very much Chinese. And then there's Misa, racial stereotype.
Yes, because we all love Jar Jar Binks.
I mean, Jar Jar Binks is basically Step and Fetch It. He's basically, it's like watching a white actor black up in a silent movie. It's that broad.
Oh, boy, boy, I love you!
And it's possibly even more insulting because he's actually played by a black actor. I think it's really offensive, the Jar Jar Binks stuff, actually. But it's just nothing compared to how the film just sucks all the magic out of Star Wars. I mean, literally, in that it puts the Force down to this biological cause, the midichlorians.
What's your midichlorian count like? Sorry. I said, what's your midichlorian count like? You know what's really...
how much I like Star Wars, probably about three.
You know what's really weird? Is that this device they have, right, to check for midichlorians looks exactly the same as the Scientology, what's it called, Dianetics thing. And I thought that was kind of weird.
Interesting.
Just putting it out there, but...
I don't know enough about Scientology for...
It was a very strange coincidence. Don't ask me what I was doing. I was looking up something on Star Wars, trying to get the spelling of midichlorians because I was trying to make some kind of joke. And at the same time, I was looking up something about Scientology for the same reason, and then I saw these pictures of these things, and they looked the same, and I'm like, eh? Star Wars, Scientology, sci-fi. Sci-fi. Makes sense.
Okay. Man, keep up, man.
But yeah, so that's Star Wars Episode One. Unless anyone's got more on that.
I haven't seen it for a while, but it like when the last time I saw it, it was like a really big disappointment. It's so badly acted. It's so poorly written. But there are some good things about it, like the character of Darth Maul, which we hardly really see, I thought was really interesting. Really good, like, makeup and really good lightsaber battle at the end. But a really good lightsaber battle at the end.
He's 3 seconds he's in it, but he's in it for 3 seconds.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, that's a bad thing. And, you know, it's got a really good lightsaber battle, but a lightsaber battle can't make a movie.
To quote
the clergy, George Lucas,
the pod race was kind of cool.
Yeah.
I haven't seen the movie in like, probably 9-8 years. So I really need to check it out again because I know at the time I really did like it a lot and I've watched it a couple of times, but it's not as fresh in my mind as probably Attack of the Clones or Revenge of the Sith. But...
You were going to say Revenge of the Nerds.
But the Revenge of the Nerds was after, is what the Star Wars fans did after when that movie came out, but that was a terrible joke. sorry.
It's true to a certain degree. There's actually a documentary coming out called The People vs. George Lucas.
Oh, I don't want to see that. That looks crap. If I want to hear like a bunch of Star Wars nerds talk about how the prequels suck or how George Lucas sucks and that, I can just go to
this podcast.
Yeah, this will go to any movie for it on the web, and even I'm going to thinking, oh, shut the fuck up, you dickheads.
Just,
who cares?
Just go to a convention and walk up to a stormtrooper.
Yeah. I bet it's like these same people. I just have a lot of problems with Star Wars fans. I mean, they sort of bitch and moan about all this kind of stuff, but I think if they actually met George Lucas, they'd be like, oh, we love the prequels. That's how I view it. So,
I'm worried that I'd punch him in the face.
I would probably slap him for Jar Jar Binks.
No, you wouldn't. Stop lying.
No, I seriously would, but then, you know...
You'd be shaking your head as, oh, I love your work.
I fucking hate Jar Jar! Slap. But I totally love Han Solo. Want to make out George Lucas? No. Wouldn't go that far.
I'll say my last thing. Like I said at the time, I didn't think Phantom Menace was as bad as people made it out to be. But then again, like I said, I haven't seen it in a long time, so I might give it a watch. But I honestly don't think it's as bad as people made it out to be. I think it's just due to high expectations. Like, I'm not saying it was perfect. Like, there were a lot of flaws in the movie, and I agree with most part what Sam said. But I think most of it is, like, people expecting, like, this amazing thing, and it did not live up to their expectations. But, you know, that's just me.
Fair enough. Moving on.
Yeah, I think
I have a feeling, some mail about this. Pretty Woman.
You monster.
I forgot you still had another one to go.
I'm sorry. I talk too much.
No, go right ahead. That's what the podcast is for.
I fucking hate Pretty Woman. Not just because I think it's bad. I actually find it quite offensive. Pretty Woman. And I'll tell you a little story to kind of explain why. As you guys and anyone who's read my website will probably know, my favourite actress in the world is Jennifer Jason Leigh, who, along with the rest of the women in Hollywood who were in their 20s at the time, was auditioned for Pretty Woman. And legend has it that she was told by Gary Marshall as a direction, okay, try it again. But remember, she's only been hooking for a few months, so it's still fun for her right now. And at that point, she walked out of the audition. Now, I hope that's true, because that's exactly why I think Pretty Woman is, you know, really quite an offensive film, because it tries to make a fairy tale out of something that in reality is distressing and depressing and really quite horrific. You know, this woman's supposed to be a prostitute walking the streets, you know, and there's no sense of the desperation of this life or of, you know, any sort of consequence or any reason that she's doing it. It's all just, oh, it's happy, it's a fairy tale, and, you know, if you're a streetwalker, you'll be picked up by Richard Gere, and, it'll all turn into fucking Pygmalion. And, you know, beyond the fact that Julia Roberts can't be anyone except Julia Roberts on screen, that Richard Gere can't be anyone but Richard Gere on screen, that it's not funny, that it's not insightful, that it's not romantic, that it's not clever, you know, that it's essentially about a relationship which is based on, you know, monetary transfer rather than feelings. Beyond all that, it's just icky. It just makes my skin crawl that people think, and a lot of women think, that this is some romantic fantasy. And it's actually this, you know, as I say, I think quite disturbingly whitewashed movie that, you know, if it had been gritty, you know, if it had had some measure of reality, might have actually been interesting. But by turning it into a fairy tale, I think, you know, it just makes for a really awkward and, yeah, skin-crawling movie. So, yeah, I hate Pretty Woman, and I am going to be completely unrepentant about that fact. I'm never going to get a date now.
Yeah, my mum hates you, and she hasn't heard you say that you hated it, but she hates you because it's, like, her favourite movie.
Yeah, well...
Although I'm pretty sure that's only because of Richard Gere. It's also my
mum's favourite movie, and I don't understand that either.
I think it's just the whole Richard Gere thing, because my mum has, like, a massive crush on Richard Gere.
Oh, well, fair enough.
So I would say that's probably why.
I'm just surprised of Gary Marshall's movies, this is the one that you hate over The Other Sister.
I haven't seen that movie.
Was that a 90s movie, though?
Just that was
wait.
A
night.
Yeah.
Well, I've read reviews of The Other Sister. I think, yeah, all right, that's enough.
Oh, it was too. Okay. Yeah, but what about... But,
yeah, I don't know that I've seen much of his other stuff, but I genuinely... Ugh.
Runaway Bride was pretty yuck.
Well, when you reunite Julia Roberts, Richard Gere and Gary Marshall... I'm not going to be in the audience. So I haven't seen that one either.
Yeah, don't even think about it.
If you like to send your hate mail to Sam, just email him at his website.
Sam at 24FCS.uk. Hate mail would get answered unless it is insulting.
But I completely understand where you're coming from with this movie. And I think if I watched it again, I'd just probably be like, yeah, it's a bit retarded, because prostitution is so not what it's portrayed in this movie. It's not, yeah, I mean, it's just so unbelievable and please,
like, she's as mad about being a prostitute as you would be about, like, working at Burger King. It's more of like a minor annoyance, like,
yeah, exactly.
Oh, I gotta go hooking today.
Yeah. And the tagline, and I never realized this, who knew it was so much fun to be a hooker? Well, actually, it's not.
Really? That's the tagline?
The tagline, yeah.
Oh, dear. That's really disturbing.
That's
and just... also, I mean, I don't find Julia Roberts attractive at all. I think she looks like a ginger horse. But hookers don't look like that. You know, it's, you know, or like any of the other hookers in movies, to be fair. But, you know... Yeah. She doesn't look like a real person. You just don't buy her on that street corner.
Yeah, I mean, real hookers, like, really, they're missing teeth. They haven't brushed their hair in a long time.
I mean,
they're basically doing it to feed their drug habit. You have to
knock the actress's teeth out, right?
No, but, you know, they could make them look a bit more unattractive. But realistically, if you look at, say, Charlize Theron in Monster, that's a prostitute. Yeah. That's what they normally really do look like. They're doing it to feed their drug habits.
But like everything else, it's Julia Roberts just standing there being Julia Roberts.
Yeah.
Well, the ones in Amsterdam are definitely not ugly, I can say that. Oh, never mind, I've killed the broom yet again. Ah, never mind.
You are a pair there.
His address is... I'm just saying, like, I've been to Amsterdam, so I'd walk past the windows, and yeah.
Yeah, but in where you probably were was, you know, it's the sex district. You can't really have them looking ugly if you want to make a lot of money.
Yeah, well, but I work as a prostitute part-time, so, you know, it's a glamorous job for me.
Has Richard Gere come along yet to sweep you off your feet?
No, unfortunately. I'm still waiting for Helen Mirren to come by.
Bede, I can see you going to, like, the red light district in Amsterdam and just trying to get all the hookers to watch Golden Bat. I can just see you do.
Oh, yeah, they'll love that shit, man.
It's a good use of your money.
Well, I could safely say when I wasn't out looking for hookers. I was just walking past and I saw them there and they looked terrible. Like, I wouldn't pay them to do anything. I'd pay them to fucking go away out of my face.
Yeah, but wasn't she
this is what Soho is like as well, yes.
Yeah, but wasn't, like, Julia Roberts, like, a hooker in, like, Beverly Hills? So maybe they're a bit more glamorous there. I'm just saying.
No, I haven't been there, but from what I understand in that whole area, they're pretty gross. Yeah.
But, you know, that's not the major point. The major point is, you know, the way the movie unfolds. But...
Yeah, well, yeah.
All right. Okay. I think, B, you've still got to do number two and number one, don't you?
Yep, I still do.
Well,
and I wish I could do a number one and a number two on both these movies.
But I'm dead.
Okay, my number two is The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Next Generation.
Oh, dear.
This movie, like, this is one of three movies that I physically wanted to rip my television out of the wall and just smash it to the ground. But like AJ, I'm just a persistent kind of person when it comes to movies. I have to watch it from beginning to end, no matter what type of movie it is. But, yeah, I came pretty close. And this movie was just fucking terrible. It was so painful to watch. And the fact is, like, this movie only got released is because the fact that it was made in 94, I think. And the only reason it got released, like, 2 years later is because Matthew McConaughey and Renee Zellweger started becoming famous.
Yep.
It's like she was in Jerry Maguire and he was in A Time to Kill. And so they thought, let's capitalize on both their celebrity by releasing this piece of crap onto the world.
Yep.
Yeah. This movie is terrible. And it, like, this movie, this entire movie is sent up to me in one scene. Like, there's one scene, and I'll never forget this scene because it's just so horrible. And I just couldn't believe they actually did this scene in the movie. It's like one of the characters is running away from Leatherface's family. He's running down the road, and Leatherface's dad comes along, and it's like, mind you, the guy who's running away, he's not running that fast. He's just, like, jogging.
Right.
And the father just, like, rolls up next to him. And it's like, you're not going anywhere, so get in. And the guy's like, oh, all right. And so he just gets in the car reluctantly without even, like, any effort. He just, like, And that brings up, like, the FBI and aliens at some point. It's been a long time since I've seen the movie, and I'm trying to have a mental block of this movie. It's just so fucking awful.
Indeed.
I've never seen it, but I do understand that it was either Zellweger or McConaughey apparently tried to sue to stop it from being released.
Oh, they should have tried harder.
I've only heard of that in one other case, which was Madonna sued to stop A Certain Sacrifice coming out, but failed as well.
Yeah, oh. This movie should be avoided. Like, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the original, is an amazing horror film. But every sequel after that was just horrible. Part 2 was horrible. I've never seen Part 3, but...
Leatherface isn't bad, actually.
Well, I hear
it's not great.
Yeah, I hear it's not as bad as Part 2 and Part 4, so... But I don't think it's, like, available on DVD in Australia at the moment.
I don't think Part 3 is, but Part 2 was banned here for a long time, but then they released it. So I think that you can still find on DVD.
Yeah, the only reason why it was banned for 20 years because it was crap. Not because of the content in the movie.
I found out that a lot of banned movies are actually really crap.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's why it's not out.
Yeah, Next Generation is just so horrible. What's funny though is like it was written and directed by Kim Henkel, who co-wrote the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and he actually set out to actually make this into a remake.
Right.
I don't know what happened along the way, so I think along the way he just decided to make it a sequel.
And a shit movie.
Yeah, just create a shit movie. Renee Zellweger's horrible. Matthew McConaughey is like, plays it so over the top that, it's just horrible. I hate this movie with a passion. I wish I could go further into it, but I've been having a mental block of this movie for so many years that, yeah, I wouldn't be rushing to watch this movie again anytime soon. One of the worst, it's an abomination. It's one of the worst horror films ever made.
So what's number one then?
My number one, as AJ nicely put it back at number four, Welcome to Whoop Whoop. What is that? And he always brings this movie up every time we ever chat on Facebook and that, and he knows how much I hate it, and he just does it out of spite for some reason, but is that right, AJ?
Yeah.
Yes. But because he just knows I'm too awesome. But anyway, Welcome to Whoop Whoop. What can I say about this movie? There's so many words I could use for this movie. Abomination. It's horrible. It's terrible. It's a piece of crap. Actually, a piece of crap would be better than this movie. It is the worst Australian film ever made. One of the worst films ever made. Like, it belongs at the top of both those categories. And what's horrible about this movie is that it was directed by Stephen Elliott, who previously directed probably one of my favorite Australian films and one of my favorite comedies is The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. I absolutely love that movie. And then all of a sudden he just, I don't know what went wrong with this movie, but .
So tell the listening audience, what is Welcome to Whoop Whoop about?
Okay, well, I got the Wikipedia page up. Okay, now it's about a guy named Teddy, and he's played by Jonathan Scheck, and this pretty much destroyed his career before it even started. And he plays like a bird smuggler, and his bird's after a smuggling deal goes wrong, his bird's like escape, so he has to go all the way to Australia to find them. And then along the way, he hooks up with this with this Aussie chick played by Susie Porter, and from there they just have like really unattractive sex.
Yeah, doesn't she tell him like a really awesome line?
Yeah, you know that famous line from Geely, it's turkey time, gobble gobble. This movie, her come on in this movie is like the worst come on line of all time. She just says, "Part me beef curtains." You want to have sex with her after she said that, but...
Oh, who wouldn't want to do her after that?
And then along the way, she, like, kidnaps him, and they, like, she takes him to Whoop Whoop, and it's, like, this desolate town that's, like, got rubbish and trash everywhere. And the her dad is played by Rod Taylor, who played the lead in The Birds. And from there, it just goes into the worst stereotypes of Australian culture I have ever seen in a movie. It's borderline, it's pretty much offensive, really. And the fact that it was made by Australians makes it even more offensive. Like, every worst Australian stereotype you can ever think of is in this movie. And it was such a painful experience. It's so painful. I really fucking hate this movie. And the fact that it's an Australian movie makes it even more worse. I'm
just a girl. Too dry, too hot, too many bloody flies, but it's ours. It's Australia.
Yeah.
The way I like to put it is this. If Muriel's Wedding was Batman Forever, Welcome to Whoop Whoop is Batman and Robin. It just took the whole of, oh, those Australians, they're so darn quirky and charming, and then just took it to this unfathomably awful, over-the-top level.
Yeah, the movie should have been a horror film, because if you actually go into the plot, it actually reads like a horror movie. It is kind of a horror movie for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah, well, you know, getting asked to do that with the...
Part me beef curtains.
Yeah, that's just a nightmare in itself, that line. Oh, it really is. I'm so glad that Susie Porter has moved on to better things.
Yeah, thank goodness for her. Because she's a good actress, but oh, I'm surprised that she was able to get a career after this movie.
Yeah, well, thanks to someone I know put her in a really good Australian movie. And yeah, she got lots of nominations for that movie.
Yep.
That's all we'll say about that.
It's a horrible movie. Everyone should not see this. Actually, the best way to make sure that nobody ever sees this movie is pretend it doesn't exist. Never speak of it again.
Indeed.
It's like the Candyman. It only exists if you believe it does.
Yes.
Indeed. Poor Australian movies. No wonder that there's this reputation that, you know, Australian movies just... Yeah, you know, cannot, you know, like, they don't do well in our own country and blah, 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 and it's because, you know, they make shit like that.
Yeah.
It's okay, you've always got the trump card of having made Picnic at Hanging Rock.
Yeah. But even, like, the really crappy ones are at least, like, Citizen Kane compared to this movie.
And those are the ones that get released in America, and that's why Americans think that everyone in Australia is just this really eccentric character. Like, everyone in Australia is this really wacky person who's just so endearing.
Yeah, I'm totally wacky. Hello.
I'm surprised of a lot of crap that actually, Aussie crap that actually gets into the US. Not the good ones, but the crap. Actually, I have an honorable mention. I forgot to mention this. I'll just name the title, and I just don't want to talk about it. The Avengers, with Ralph Fiennes, Uma Thurman, and Sean Connery. Yeah, it's...
Uma Thurman, you have made this list more than once. Shame on you.
Yes. You need to get a better agent, Uma. Especially lately. You haven't been in a good movie since Kill Bill, so do something about it.
Her last cinema release here grossed $12. A screen average of £9.
Yeah, I think that pretty much sums it up, doesn't it?
Yep.
Anyway, I think we've all done our all our top movies now. Yes?
Yep.
We've all had our turn because I completely, like, lose track of things. Yeah, well, I think we've got ourselves worked up and pissed off and shit on a lot of movies.
I'm sending you the bill, Marcy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know, this was therapy for me. I got to sit and shout about things for an hour and a half. That's fine.
Yeah, exactly. It's good to just, you know, shit on these crappy movies.
We need to start talking about good movies next.
Yeah, then when it's a good movie, it's like, oh, this movie's great. Oh, yeah.
Because I like talking about good movies rather than bad movies.
I seem to
the
just...
ones that are painful to talk
but
about.
But I seem to just have more to say about shitty movies than I do about movies I absolutely love. So, yeah. But I think that's a wrap anyway. As usual, I should thank my three guests for coming on the show, and especially to Bede and I for staying up so late. Damn time zones are a pain in the ass.
Yes.
And I guess AJ for not sleeping.
I'll bring pants next time, I swear.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I forgot what I was saying, yeah. Anyway, that's a wrap, and until next time, I'm the best. So see you later.
See you, everyone.
See you. Cheers.
Yeah. Chorando se foi.